Hello, this is Phil Shepherd giving you advance notice of this week's community show and the careers slot between 10 a.m. and 11 a.m. this Friday on 10 Radio. This week's focus is online questionnaires, online information, sending you online to get the information you need to make the applications you need. How do you feel about that? Does it make life simpler or does it drive you mad? Tom Banks will be on air talking with us about how Careers Southwest are putting together a whole lot of different measures to try and make life easier for people seeking jobs, people seeking training, people seeking further education. Come and join us this Friday, 10 a.m, 10 Radio, the Careers Special.
Supported by Careers Southwest, helping you get on in work and life.
Well, it's 10 o'clock on the community show, and indeed we have Phil Shepherd from Somerset Film and Tom Banks in the studio, and also Daniel's with us. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Eddie.
Good morning, Ed.
Good morning.
Right, where are we with recruitment at the moment? I mean, there are still lots of jobs out there, aren't there? Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. It's the job market for some people is quite flat, but I think it's a lot of people have got to look at their applications now and find out what are we applying for. The jobs that are out there might not be the jobs that you want at the moment, but that's what today is about, looking at those online applications, how you can adapt your skills, get your skills over to make sure that you can actually get your CV up to date and be there at the forefront of what's coming out.
Yeah, I mean, Tom's going to tell us about some changes with Job Centre Plus and their database, but quite a lot of companies already have their jobs on their own websites, don't they? And they're inviting people to apply via their websites.
They certainly do, and I think that is one of the big areas of frustration that people find, that because each job application site and each portal is so different from each other. So it's really about how we can actually take some of the mystery out of the applications. Some top tips for you, what you can do to actually help your application, and actually what we can do about safeguarding data. It's about also about feeling safe online as well, because don't forget we are putting a load of data out there, but it's also about making sure that your application stands out from the crowd.
And of course there's still a lot of people who have never used a computer before, have got very little access to them, so hopefully in this program we'll be talking about how those people can be helped when they really haven't got access to a regular computer.
Yes, Ed, I mean, one of the major facts that we will find in is that there is this assumption by a lot of companies that everyone has got those digital literacy skills, but unfortunately they haven't. Just because you can't fill in an online application form doesn't mean that you won't be good at the job you're applying for. So it's about where you can get help. We at the National Career Service are there to help you every step along the way. We can actually point out where you might be get that little... It might not be a full-blown IT course you need. It's just that little help to get you online and applying online.
The basics of it don't go away, though, Tom, do they? One of the things you know, an absolutely fundamental part of all of this is getting your CV together and having a CV that reflects your skills and presents you in the best possible light.
Certainly. The CV, I think, is the cornerstone of job searching and application, because once you've actually settled down with your CV, you've explored what skills you have, especially what skills you have in relation to the job that you're applying for. I think that's the most important thing with CVs. A decent CV will help you with every application you make. Have a decent CV printed in front of you when you're actually making those online applications. You're not sat there scratching your head, when did you do that job? What did you do in that job? What skills have you got? So it's the cornerstone of every application is a decent CV.
You went over to watch it recently and did an outside broadcast with 10 Radio with my colleague Debbie Richardson. Let's have a listen to that, because I think that was an interesting conversation about CVs.
So, Tom, I've seen the advert in the paper. I've seen the job I'm interested in. Help me to get that job. What's the first thing I need to
know? Well, the first thing you need to think about is, how can I get my skills across? And what the best advice I can give everyone when they're first starting to look for work is to actually start thinking about that dreaded CV. The CV is the thing that probably people find most bewildering.
the different advice that seems to be out there. You look online and one person says, do it this way. You then speak to a qualified advisor and say, oh no, you do it this way. Then you speak to your friend who's just got a job using a CV. Oh, mine looks totally different. You start pulling your hair out, you're scratching your head, you think, who's right, who's wrong? It's one of those issues that the CV is going to be always the big area that it makes that first impression for you.
I'm so glad you said that, because I was going to ask a really stupid question, which is, do I put CV on the top of my CV? Now, is that a daft question?
Well, I think the first thing to remember with CVs, the golden rule of CVs, is that there aren't any rules. What we have to look at, what's a CV for? At the end of the day, some people say it's about how you market yourself. Some say it's a list of what you've done. But when all said and done, a CV is about getting that job interview. So really, if we strip things back, what's a CV for? It's to get a job interview. We start at that premise. It's to get that certain job. So what do I need to do? I need to prove I've got the skills to go for those jobs. I think the best indication of a CV, because the only good CV is one that gets you a job interview. So you could say to people, actually, how good's your CV? And you could actually sometimes say, without even looking at the content, how good's the CV? How many interviews has it got you? So sometimes we can say, you've got a good CV without even looking at it. But there are some fundamentals that I think people have got to realise. When you're looking for work, you're never really in control. You can't control the number of jobs that are out there. You can't control the questions you're going to be asked to interview. But the one thing you can control is your CV, because you're in total control of the information that's in it and also the information that's not in it. It's very important for you to take control of your CV, and that's where we at the National Career Service can help along the way.
So I'm not just looking perhaps at having one CV. If it's working for me, I might bring that CV out for sort of 9 or 10 jobs. But perhaps each time I should be looking back at my CV before I apply and maybe tweaking it a little?
Certainly. The targeted approach is the one that works. If you consider that you might be applying for a job one day as a retail assistant, and the next day you might be applying for a job in administration. Well, obviously, you might have got the skills for both jobs, but you won't be emphasising the skills, your retail skills, customer service skills for the retail assistant job. You might want to emphasise your computer skills or all your organisational skills as far as the administration job's concerned. So really, it's about looking at the job you're going for, looking at the skills that are required, and actually tailor-making your CV to fit those skills that are required for the job that you're sending it off for.
So, I'm going to do my CV and I need some help. Where do I turn to?
The National Career Service, without doubt. On our website, we do have quite a comprehensive CV builder that will take you through each stage of actually building that CV. But some people aren't always that computer literate. This is where that face-to-face appointment. Come and let us help you develop your CV. I'm not going to say we're going to write a CV for you, because actually that's not what it's about, because you've got to be able to actually tailor-make your CV for every application you make. But we will give you the tools, we will empower you, we will give you that advice, we will help you develop your CV, so that actually it goes from being, say, a 3-page CV that's never read, acts like junk mail, to one that's actually at the top of the pile and achieving results.
That's brilliant advice. Thank you so much. And can I just put, it's great that you mentioned that not everybody has got access to the internet. I know we can go to the library and there are lots of different places where we can access computers. So how else can I book for one of those face-to-face interviews?
What you can do, you can actually contact the National Career Service by telephone at 0800 100 900. I will also mention that we are co-located in every job centre in the West Country. Has a National Career Service advisor in there for at least one day a week. Some of the larger centres have full-time coverage, and it's an ongoing programme we've got where we're actually co-locating within job centres, within community centres. And here in Watchet, we've got a new project that we say Local Futures coming in, that we're coming into family centres, into schools, into pubs and clubs near you. So just ask, make that referral, and we can do that and take that first step to get that CV getting you results.
Thank you so much. And that number again, please?
0800 100 900.
There you go. Great place to go and get some advice and start building your CV, and hopefully that'll get you back into work or perhaps onto the next rung on the ladder in your career.
National Careers Service. Everything you need to take your next career step.
So CVs, all important, Tom. Any further thoughts on that? You were saying earlier, you were showing me a document that Career Southwest produces, which I think your trainers and advisors take around with them, which has a lot of information which the, you know, people may not be aware of, around things like being aware that when you do your CV and you put it in online, it will probably be scanned by, or if they get a paper copy, it will then be scanned by the employer. And there's ways of doing it and there's ways of not doing it, taking that into account. There's also people that demand text-only CVs. So there's a bit of a minefield out there, and I know that you've got some detailed advice on that available, some of which you're going to leave in paper copy here, aren't you, that people will be able to collect from Ten Radio?
Yes, we are. I mean, the online applications and looking at CVs, companies now have some digital software where they actually scan CVs. They look for set words, they look for set formats. And so it's really to give people the tips of how they can present their CVs so that when they are read, that they can be actually, that recognition software picks up the right things. So we've got some detailed leaflets on this, which we will leave with Ten Radio. Also, we are able to provide these for people if they call into our one-stop shop in Mendip House in Taunton as well. So we will leave that with you. The other one about rich text formats, of course, a lot of CVs now are in different formats, and the rich text formats of a document enables most software systems to pick it up without the danger of viruses, and a lot of companies now know how to do that. So come in again and we'll give you advice on how you can save your Word CV into what we call a rich text format, so it can be uploaded and read by potential employers, because there's nothing worse than producing a CV, sending it off as an attachment and finding out that the employer can't open it up.
Well, that's right, and of course Microsoft in their wisdom and marketing strategy have gone from 2003 to 2007 to 2010 and 2012. And I think people will do their CVs on whatever word processing program they've got on their computer. And if they've got a very new version of that, then they save it. My advice would be always to save it as an RTF, rich text format, and even to do it as Microsoft 2003, because, you know, some of these smaller businesses don't have the latest word processing, so there's nothing more frustrating than getting a CV from someone and you can't open it because so think to the lowest denomination. I think really you've got to think ahead.
That's a very good point, Ed. I mean, what you remember that some companies might have 200, 300, 400 applications in, they're not going to get back to you and say, sorry, we can't open your CV, because they've got other CVs they can look at.
And it's very easy to you know, if you do know your bit about word processing, you should be able to save it as a very early version of Word, I think, yeah.
And if not, come in and ask us for some advice. That's what we're there for.
Yeah. Eddie's done his usual homework on music with the correct related themes today. And so let's have a bit of Neil Young.
Yeah, this is Neil Young, and he put out an album in the very early 1980s, and it was his reaction to the computer age. And this is Computer Age by Neil Young. was Neil Young and Computer Age, and we are talking about applying for jobs online using improving your CV and other things with Career Southwest and Phil Shepherd.
And Dan, you're a young man in looking forward to a career, you hope, in sound engineering, radio broadcasting.
Yep, that's
the What questions have arise for you around CVs and preparing CVs?
Well, CVs in general are fairly confusing at times, and you want to try and make them as simple as possible. But it's also what else could you put with the CV? So could you attach a covering letter to the CV or anything along those lines?
Tom, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, always. I mean, there's a little unwritten rule that a CV should never travel alone. It should always be accompanied by a cover letter. But beware. Sometimes I speak to people and say, oh, well, I didn't put that skill in my CV, I've put it in my cover letter. What happens if the cover letter and the CV get split up? All those skills you talked about in your cover letter aren't read on your CV. So what we would say is bring out the salient points of why you're good for that application. What a cover letter does, it directs your application. It also makes sure it goes to the right person. Because if you're just sending off speculatively a CV, it ends up a little bit like junk mail. Whereas the cover letter, a good research cover letter, will direct that application through. So always do a cover letter. But that cover letter should be short and to the point.
Okay.
It shouldn't be like repeating your CV, but it should be bringing out the salient points from your CV.
Right, okay then.
What other points did you have, Dan? You raised something else?
Yeah. Also, if I was writing my CV, would it be easier to print it out? So not a stylized handwriting and easier to read and possibly a bigger font. Would that be helpful?
So what you... Because I'll just confirm, are you trying to say what a handwritten CV is?
Yeah, handwritten CVs.
Yeah. I would advise against handwritten CVs.
Yeah.
But yet, most people have got access to a computer.
Yeah.
Most people have got access to software that will actually to write them out. The thing with handwritten CVs, unless you've got copper plate type writing, it's got to stand out from the crowd. And actually, a nicely typed CV in a very easy to read font, and easy to read is the crucial thing here, not too small. What we've got to remember, as people get older, like myself, your eyes seem to go a little bit. So those, if you're trying to cram everything under one page and you bring that font size down to 8 or 10, it might not be easy for the employer to read. So try and keep it around about a 12 size font and keep it easy to read. Another good tip for CVs is the white bits. The white bits on a CV make a CV easy to read. So don't have it too cluttered and too much in there.
Okay then.
We've got an interview that I recorded a few days ago with a chap who runs an internet coffee bar. And I think this illustrates some of the problems people have when they're trying to engage with, in this case, trying to enrol for a course online.
I'm with Ali. He's working in an internet coffee bar. Ali, what kind of experiences do you see some of the customers have here when they attempt to negotiate online to fill in a form?
Okay, so just this morning, actually, we had a lady in that grabbed a cup of coffee and hooked up to our Wi-Fi, and she was applying to do further education at university, and she was just having all sorts of difficulties with actually just applying for the course that she wanted to be on. So it started with a phone call, and it was I want to be on this, that, and the other, and then it was yes, you have to apply online. Come into the coffee bar, apply online, didn't work, called them up, said, I'm trying to apply online. Well, when did you enroll? When did you enroll? Well, I enrolled yesterday. Or maybe that's not active yet, because once you're enrolled, then you should be able to apply. She said, so I've come back next day, exactly the same thing, you know. Yeah, just seems to be a few kind of like chinks in the armour, if you like, of how to actually apply for things online and how they work and when they don't work, how to get over that, really, because there's nobody you can turn to and say, is this right, is that right? It's you know, you're all very much left to yourself to do it.
Yeah, that lack of human contact, there's no one to actually go and really get some support from.
No, absolutely not. And if anything, it's usually a phone number, which maybe isn't always directly related to what you're trying to do. That phone number may be generic, and you know, there's nobody to actually talk to about your specific need or problem.
And you might get caught in the machinations of an automated switchboard.
Well, I don't want to say too much on automated switchboards.
No, we won't go there today.
No.
Thanks, Ali. Tom, any thoughts on that?
It's a scenario that has been replayed many, many times. I think people have this frustration with sometimes online systems, and some companies and some universities, some colleges, every site differs. And what I would say to people is, if you are having problems, let that site know. There's a contact us and ask for feedback. Let them know what your concerns are. They might not be they might be unaware that there's problems applying for courses. The one good thing that was brought out there was about registration and application. A lot of these sites require you to register first before you apply. So many people I've seen actually look for courses and can't find them, or look for jobs and can't find them, because actually they're not enabled yet because they haven't registered with their details. So if you can register, treat it as two separate occasions. Make sure you register and you've got all your questions ready, and then so that when you do come for applications, it's there. But don't waste time. If you can't find it, ring someone up. Come in and see us at the National Career Service. We can actually help you look at those courses and find and make those applications.
And also, by registering, often you can have the latest vacancies sent to you by email, can't you? You know, so they'll often say, well, what sort of, you know, in which areas do you want to work? And so you can get a weekly update of the latest vacancies.
Certainly can do from some site. Every site differs, and every employer site differs.
Yeah.
But the big thing sometimes it is that frustration, isn't it? And I know sometimes you look at a website and you try and navigate your way through, and it is difficult. It's difficult for those of us that regard ourselves as computer savvy. So for those people that are actually just using the computer by way of application and they only use it very rarely, it becomes a very difficult job for them. So come in and see us at the National Career Service. Ring us up, 0800 100 900. Come into one of our one-stop shops, see one of our advisors, and we'll be able to actually help you cut through that bewilderment that goes on around this process.
And of course, there are some people who maybe want to work in a hospital and whatever, and you know, there's a national NHS careers website, and you know, there are jobs for psychiatrists, doctors, alongside porters and that sort of thing. So don't just think that I'm only looking for a porter vacancy. Well, it's going to be on the same website that doctors and nurses are using.
Certainly is. I mean, the NHS website themselves, and there are some local variations, but to actually register on the NHS careers website is one that you take time to register to make sure that all the details you've got on there. And then what that particular website does makes it very easy to make repeat applications. So it's one there to actually get there.
When I was in the internet coffee bar earlier this week, I also talked to a chap called Peter. Let's have a listen to what Peter had to say. I'm sitting here with Peter in Bridgewater. Peter, I can see you're sitting here with your tablet. You're obviously good at navigating the web?
Sort of. I'm still a learner yet. That's why I've come here to get some hints and tips.
What do you find difficult about using the web, or what were the obstacles for you when you first started using it?
Remembering passwords and my web address. Until I've got a bad memory. My tablets that I take affects my memory, so I've got to write everything down, and if I don't write it down, I've lost it. So.
You know, sometimes you go online and to buy something or to look something up, and you've got to fill in an online questionnaire. How do you get on with them?
I don't do it. Obvious reasons, because there's a lot of scammers out there. I've known people order stuff, pay for it, nothing's coming back, and they found out afterwards it's a scam. So they've lost quite a bit.
How do you know who to trust on the internet?
I only trust my friends and my relatives for emails and things like that. So I don't go onto any eBays or anything like that, because I don't really trust anything like that.
And have you had to fill in any online questionnaires for any reason?
Yes. My internet provider, plus my doctor's surgery, sometimes that fails. It just chucks me off. That's the reason I've changed now from BT Wired to BT Infinity. A lot quicker, a lot safer, and the forms are a lot easier.
What does it feel like when you get chucked off a questionnaire?
Annoying, because you spent so long typing it in, getting it wrong, go to the last bit and then it all disappears, and you're wondering where it's gone, and it comes up with error on the screen. The person you wrote the form out has got it wrong slightly somewhere along the line, so just kills it off. Very annoying.
Thank you, Peter. So, Tom, how do we know who to trust online?
It's a very, very important area, this. When we are applying for jobs, we are putting a lot of personal information in. Only apply to jobs where you are sure about the validity of the website you're applying to. Most reputable companies will have secure internet portals, and it's knowing what is a secure portal, really. Look for that padlock. There's a padlock normally in the corner on the browser. That will tell you when you're through to a secure website. It's really important. Sometimes there are some very unscrupulous people out there that might be putting spurious jobs up online just to glean your personal information. Try and make sure that you verify a little bit about which sites you're making applications on. Very important. It's the personal data you are. I mean, because don't forget, there's some very personal data normally asked for. Dates of birth, national insurance numbers, you know, your address. All these things people can get together. Never, ever input a bank account details online. Most good employers will not be asking for them on job application forms.
And you should never put your national insurance number on your CV.
Yeah, quite correct.
Yeah, and you don't even need your date of birth on the CV.
No.
A lot of people put it on marital status. I mean, those are sort of big no-nos now, aren't they?
They certainly are.
Okay. Mark? One of the things that we want to emphasise on all of this is that nothing to stop. The old skills don't go away. The old imperatives don't go away. Resilience, application, hard work, persistence is a really important thing. And we've got a pre-recorded interview with a guy called Mike Lidford that my colleague Kirsty Bicknell recorded a few weeks back. Let's hear from Mike. His story is a salutary one, and I think Tom will want to comment on that.
I'm joined by Michael Lidford, who has just come to the end of his PGCE year. Could you just briefly describe what a PGCE year is?
A PGCE year is teacher training. It's a combination of university-based work and being in schools actually teaching. So it's like going back to university for about a month, and then it's absolutely not like being at university at all. It's like a full-time job, being in a school, being a teacher, putting theory into practice.
Is there any salary in this year?
Afraid not, no. There are routes into teaching where you do get paid, but unfortunately the university-based route that I'm doing, the PGC, is completely unpaid.
Did the course give you any preparation or help you in any way for interviews at the end of the year?
Yes, it does. One of the main things, obviously, is that particularly the course leaders are very keen for you to get jobs, as it's quite a competitive market. So they give you all the help that they can, and I've generally found that you become quite close to the people you're working with, your mentors and the other teachers, and they give you advice day to day, really. As long as you're comfortable with them and you ask them questions, they're really quite open in the advice that they give.
And what did you have to do to start looking for jobs and preparing for the interview process?
For jobs in September, as in the September following the end of the course, I started looking around about January, February.
Where do you go to find jobs?
Jobs are either advertised on the school's website, so you have to know which school you would particularly like to work in. If you're familiar in the local area, for instance, you could keep an eye on the one, two or three schools in your local area. The other route, and the one that I certainly looked at, was the TES website, or the paper, which is the Times Educational Supplement. It's basically a magazine, a paper for teachers, and pretty much all jobs go through there, either the hard copy, either the newspaper, or on the website, which is the same stuff for free. So that's what I did.
And on the actual day of the interview, what do you have to go through?
The interview day is funny in teaching. You're there with about four or five others to begin with, and it's generally about a half day in which you are expected to teach a lesson. This is either a whole lesson, such as like an hour, 50 minutes, or it could be just a block of a lesson, 20 minutes or so. The key people from the school, so the senior managers and the head of departments, they circulate amongst you whilst you're all teaching at the same time. It's quite a daunting task, and you obviously have to put a lot of effort into planning that lesson. And it's particularly difficult if you're only teaching for 20 minutes, because you have to cover everything that you would in the whole hour, ensuring that you kind of cover all aspects of an outstanding lesson.
And have you now got a job?
I do, yes. I have a job. I got it a couple of weeks ago.
And what have been the challenges throughout this whole year?
For me, I think the biggest challenge is the workload. It's not an easy route into the profession at all. It's a lot of work, a lot of late nights, work during the actual day. Luckily, I'm at the stage now where it does have only a couple of weeks to go, so I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and obviously I've got my job, which has kind of taken the pressure off a little bit. I'd say the hardest thing, if you take away the bad behaviour of some students, which is inevitable, I think in any school you're going to get that, but that is outweighed massively by the good students, the ones that want to be there, the ones that want to learn, and they say some really amazing things that you just think, yeah, this is great, this is why I want to be a teacher.
Would you encourage a teaching profession?
I would, absolutely, yeah. I would certainly look into doing even just a few days in a school, either primary or secondary, whichever route you want to go down. Just go in and have a look and make sure it's right for you before you start applying, because it really is an intensive course, and you really are going to want to make sure it's the right thing for you. I've found that schools are very open to visitors. All you need to do is make contact, and they'll accommodate you as much as they can. Make that initial contact, and it could be the best thing you've ever done.
Woo! Thank you very much, Michael Lidford.
Thank you.
Tom, hard work, resilience pays off.
It certainly does. What you've got to remember, there's a lot of people applying for jobs out there, and applying for work is a job in itself. You've got to approach it like a job. You've got to kind of keep on going. You aren't going to be successful with every application you make, and it's one of those. It is hard work, resilience, keeping note of where you've sent off to, so you know exactly what you've applied for. Sometimes we might be applying for jobs that actually, some agencies, for instance, put jobs up that perhaps are not there. They just want your CV in to actually say that they can actually take it on to other people. It's keeping going. You're going to get a load of no's before you get that was. Because don't forget, you can have 150 no's. All you need is one yes.
That's right. And often you'll say in your CV, you've got lots of drive and determination. Well, you've got to show that by keep on going with your job application.
You certainly do. I would suggest to people as well is that don't wait till the afternoon. Try and do it in the morning. If you're out of work, look for stuff in the morning. That's when normally a lot of these websites are uploaded and done overnight, so the actual new jobs are there first thing in the morning. So it's really about, don't wait till 3-4 o'clock, because your chance might have gone. So approach it as though you looking for work is a job in itself, and actually needs to have that discipline.
I mean, quite a lot of the job seekers that I speak to say that they never hear back from the employer, etc., which is frustrating and can be demoralising. But when companies are faced by hundreds of applications, in some cases, particularly small business, they just don't have the ability to write back to everyone. And they're very apologetic when you ring them up. But also some companies, Somerset County Council, for example, on their application say, if you haven't heard within 3 weeks, accept that you've not been successful on this occasion.
Here's an appropriate piece of music for the moment. I Get Knocked Down, Chumbawamba. Let's go back to Tom and hear some more tips from him on this all-important matter of your of the CV.
The first top tip I can give everyone is try and keep a dedicated job searching email address. An email account, as we know, if we use our general email account, we've got all those notifications from Facebook going in there, we've got all this spam mail coming in, and it's very difficult then to actually find out which emails, which communication relates to my job search. So actually, if you have a dedicated email account just for your job search, it means that all items related to job search is going into one inbox. The other one is to make sure that that is a professional looking email address. We've all seen those jokey email addresses that have been set up for us. What we've got to remember is that employers are looking at those. So that, you know, if you've got that I get wasted on a Friday night at hotmail.com as your email address, it might not go down too well with a potential employer. So tip number one, use a separate email account for your job searching. Secondly, target your CV to the job that you're applying for and always give the employer information they want to read. They don't want to read about your marital status or your date of birth. What they want to know is what skills you've got for that job. Keep your CV clear and focused. Keep it relevant and don't clutter it with information that they don't want to use. Presentation, spelling and grammar mistakes. So many people get themselves out of the game straight away by simple spelling mistakes. Make sure that you use spell check. Use other people to read through your CV. Spell check doesn't always get those words out that are actually spelt correctly, but they're used in the wrong context. Sell yourself. Don't forget, it's your choice to put yourself at the forefront. Be positive. It's the language of positivity, not those possibly and maybes. Above all, be honest. What you've got to remember as well, at the end of the day, the best thing is to get help. Abraham Lincoln once said, a man that represents himself has a fool for a cunt. Very important fact. The person least likely to pick any mistakes in the CV is you. Free help is available, so use it. We may be able to suggest ways you can improve your CV as well as proofread it. So call us to book an appointment. As I say, 0800 100 900. Pop into any job centre, into our drop-in centre at Mendip House, and we're there for you.
Thanks, Tom. I get knocked down. Rachel's with us.
Hi.
Rachel, you went over to watch it, didn't you, recently, along with Tom, on the Alice mobile truck. And that was a family day, wasn't it?
Well, that was part of the Sure Start Children's Centres. And we met lots of parents at the fun day. it was really interesting because a lot of the parents, if they haven't got access immediately to computers at home, it's such a stumbling block. And I just wanted to kind of see if we could chat about exactly where can they get free access and where can they get, you know, if they want to create a job file, which I think is a great idea, like having a separate email, but also having a job file where you print off your separate CVs and letters, because it's quite hard to remember, even if you're telling the truth the whole time, exactly what you've said to who, because you're kind of editing your CVs for different jobs. So if you're wanting to print off, I mean, I've used the library in the past to go and use computers, but quite often you have to pay. And obviously if you're looking for work and you're perhaps a young mum with a couple of children, and, you know, it's very expensive sometimes if you're trying to create a folder. Also, because a lot of the job centres, if you're on benefits, they want to see proof. Now, how do you then prove that you're actually doing all this work and applications? You know, so it's where can they get this free access and free printing?
Right, some good questions, Rachel, really. I mean, free access to the internet. It's something that actually you would think, especially with the job centre moving over to what they call their universal job match, it's something that is actually there. The job centres themselves will actually soon be having dedicated PCs for the use of their customers are being installed into job centres as we speak. It's a rollout programme over the next 12 months. But libraries is the major source of free internet access. But once again, we've got this printing issue. What I would say is that we do provide computer access, we do provide free printing access of CVs, anything related to job search, at our one-stop national career shop in Mendip House in Taunton. We're right opposite the job centre there. People can drop in and use the facilities there. Also, when actually seeing any of our advisors from the National Career Service, they will be able to point you in the direction where your local free resources are. There's a series of work clubs throughout the county, which actually, if you contact your job centre, they will tell you where there's local job clubs or work clubs are. They will be providing you with free access and with free printing facilities. It is an issue that, you know, sometimes it's 10, 15 pence per copy and you've got 10 CVs to send out. Mm. And that's a lot of money out of someone on benefit. So it's really there.
And as I said, you know, where I was talking to mums and to dads was in Watchet, and it's a very, you know, it's a rural, isolated community. It's quite, you know, the nearest two job centres are Minehead and Taunton. By the time you've got there, you've spent, you know, perhaps £5, £6 return. So, yeah, it's just finding out where those local job clubs are. And I'm not sure if the libraries allow you to take a USB stick. I mean, if you've got a memory stick, you can perhaps, you know, download everything onto there. You've got your, you know, you've used your internet access, and then at least you've got a copy somewhere.
Yeah, I would advise people to actually have their own little USB stick. I mean, most libraries do allow you to do them, because they've got various software that will virus check that memory stick.
Well, I've got a very simple way of overcoming that. Just email your CV to yourself, to your own email address, and then you've always got it on your own email system. A lot of people use these online emails like Hotmail, Google, Yahoo, etc. So if you've actually emailed it, you know, BT account or whatever, then just store it away in a job search folder, then you've always got your CV ready to download wherever you are.
So if you're on benefits and you go in to have an interview to check how your job searching is going, how would people then prove? I mean, this is slightly off on a tangent because obviously we're talking about looking for jobs.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking, you know.
Well, I think we're sort of in the realms of JobCentre Plus and what they expect of their clients, and they give all their clients a booklet or a coupon in which they're actually got to record all their job search activities. And
one of the main things as well that a lot of the mums were saying to me is that what skills have we got and how do we go about analysing what I'm good at? You know, they sometimes, it's quite easy if you've had a couple of children and it's, you know, 5-6 years since you've had a full-time or even a part-time job. It's quite easy to kind of forget your skills and your strong points.
Right, this is where the National Career Service comes in. We can do this through a couple of ways, but our major way is to get people actually registered on the National Career Service website, which you can use any search engine, just put National Career Service in, search for it, and there is a whole series of what we call skills health checks on that website. What that's able to do is to actually let you work out where your skills are. across some areas. It might be numerically, it might be literacy, it might be motivation, it might be also communication skills, organisational skills. So it can help identify those skills that you've got. Because actually, with young mums especially, it's not the skills, they've got the skills they always had, but they're actually learning new skills all the time and how they can relate. And the beauty of the skills health checks is they will then match those skills and those qualities to actual possible occupational paths, and then link through to a whole range of information about job entry points into job profiles and what training might be available. So go on the National Career Service website, the skills health check area is one that there is, and open a lifelong learning account, it's called, and take it through. It only takes 5 clicks and you've got one.
Fantastic. I mean, it's amazing as well when you start saying to parents or to people that are out of work what that, you know, thinking in a slightly lateral way, it's amazing how it suddenly clicks. I mean, things like, you know, you've got scheduling, time management, telephone skills, negotiating skills, you're constantly negotiating with toddlers, you know, fundraising with parents, teachers association, you're an educator, you're a money manager. You know, so many skills.
All these skills are there, and I think, and that's one of the major reasons that I think that it's about looking. We're very good at telling other people what they're good at, aren't we? But actually trying to actually say what we're good at ourselves, and that is the whole fundamental of a CV. We're able to find out, let's get down in writing, what are we good at?
Yeah, and, you know, if people have had a period of unemployment, you know, if they've been doing other things, I mean, a good example is someone who might be organising a local football team and that sort of thing. Well, you know, running a football team's rules and regulations, dealing with discipline matters, dealing with the prima donnas who want to get picked all
or
the time.
Or the Maradonas even.
Or the Maradonas and whatever. Or they might have done things on a charitable basis. And before the programme started, we talked about volunteering opportunities. And, you know, there are lots of opportunities out there within people's personal lives which can be put onto a CV.
And I think quite often people can also take knockbacks too personally. I think if you've been out of the job market for a few years, this very fact we're talking about online applications, people still expect that they'll get that phone call back or they'll get that letter back. When you don't hear anything, don't take it personally. It's just the way things have changed.
That's right.
It may not be for the better, but it's the way it is. I mean, myself in my career, I must have applied for hundreds of jobs, and very infrequently ever heard anything back. So don't take it personally. It's not a reflection on who you are. It's just you're not right for that particular job.
Dan's still with us. Dan, what from your perspective? What bells is this ringing?
Well, it's more ringing of the persistence of work, of looking for jobs. I can definitely remember going on to 20 different websites every single day, looking for jobs, looking any kind of jobs, and then having constant emails coming back saying, unfortunately, you haven't got the position. But finally, when I did get a job, it was very good, and I'm still there and enjoying it, so it's all going well. And when you're looking for the job, it's what information do you put down, and is it good? Do I need to say that? Do I not need to say that? It's the choosing for the right job, what you need to say.
Yeah, because Tom, you were making a point to me earlier about not limiting your options when you put those applications in. Where you're getting, for example, where a supermarket might ask you, what's your availability? You know, are you going to be ticking just a few of the boxes, you know, to fit around your yoga class and your night out in the pub? Or are you going to say, I'm available all week?
I think what you've got to look at is, why limit your application? Lots of people, when they're making online applications, and sometimes we're making online applications to supermarkets, to retail opportunities, to leisure companies that actually work, they are open in this 24/7 world. And so if you're saying that I'm only available Tuesday afternoons, Monday mornings and Thursday evenings, well, don't be surprised if you don't hear from the company. Actually, what you say, that you're available at all times, but obviously no company will have you working all the time. Let that work pattern be part of the appointment process. Let's get to the interview stage. When we're making online applications, it's about getting that interview so you can shine.
Yeah, and you've got to, you know, if you're in a situation where you are needing a job, you know, wherever you go, look for adverts on shop windows. I mean, I went to a major store in Taunton. They're currently recruiting for their Christmas casuals now, and the application form couldn't be simpler. And again, there is a little box there saying when you're available, because they obviously want people to work in different shift patterns and that sort of thing. But, you know, we're not talking about online applications. You know, we're talking about a simple form that can be completed and dropped by the checkout operator.
I think you make a good point there, Ed, about the simple forms, because a lot of our online applications really are application forms that are put online. So sometimes, actually, if we sit back and actually treat them as an application form, write down the answers to the, you know, write down the questions and perhaps come back to it later, then you'll find that you'll actually get it a lot easier. So I think the whole idea is to treat it as an application.
Yeah. Tom, we're coming close to the end of the show. I know another point you made to me earlier, you don't just provide advice to people looking for jobs training. You cover a whole range of, you might talk to an employer, for example. Give us a snapshot of just who can come to you and at what stage?
We offer a universal service. That is a service to anyone and everyone for anything relating to learning and work. You might be a small employer who's experiences difficulties, and you might be thinking, oh, where can I get some help for my staff should the case arise? Come and talk to us. We're quite confidential. We might be able to provide some specialist services to be able to come in and speak to your staff, to speak to yourselves about what learning and work options, if businesses go wrong. We talk to colleges, we talk to people in education, we talk to employers, we talk to anyone that wants any help with learning and work.
Okay, well, thank you, Rachel, thank you, Dan, thank you, Tom, thank you, Eddie, for having us last word from you, Tom.
Certainly, once again, it's that phone number again, how to contact the National Career Service. Search for us online. We've got a one-stop shop in Mendip House in Taunton, and of course there is always our national phone line, which is open from 8 till 10, and it's 0800 100 900.
And we're going to play out with Kirsty McColl. The chap down the fish shop thinks he's Elvis. Thanks a lot. See you again.
Well, yeah, thank you very much, everyone. And here in Wiveliscombe, we've got our own chip shop, and it's almost a rite of passage to work by working down there. So there's lots of opportunities there. So thank you very much, everyone. As Phil said, there's a guy who works down the chip shop, thinks he's Elvis. Thanks very much to Phil and Tom there, and also Daniel, talking about job search. Just a reminder that there are some work clubs in Wellington and also in Taunton, which are run by Vista, supported by Taunton Dean. The job centre advisors will also be able to point you to other work clubs in the local area.